There being none, we'll go to the next agenda item, report and possible discussion on pension advisory report by Ann Company Consulting LLC by Tony Kay with Ann Company Consulting LLC.
Can I go forward in this to bring up the next presentation?
Do we need to make a recommendation on that contribution?
No, that's part of the budget.
It's already in the budget.
So it'll get approved in July when you.
Okay, we've already approved.
Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember when we did it then or when we paid it.
No, you're just informed on what that is now.
Gotcha.
In the budget, July you'll.
Okay.
Great. So everybody should have a stack of paper in front of you. Apologize for all the paper, but I can assure you my one pension plan that invests in timber appreciates that we handed out that much. Does everybody have a stack? You should have three presentations with ANCO. All right, very good. So we'll start in the presentation entitled Executive Summary. And this is data through March 31st. We also, our team back in Orlando worked very hard to provide a May 31st update, so we'll go through that in a few moments. But you can see for at least calendar year, beginning balance of 12/31/2017 of $21.5 million. Distributions or outflows of close to $600,000. Fees and expenses, marginal over this time period. Income of $100,000, and then asset depreciation of $700,000. So, of course, first quarter was pretty volatile for investors with the Fed raising rates. S&P 500 was down about 4% in February, which was challenging. And then having exposure to some more income-oriented assets, i.e. MLPs and REITs, was a bit challenging for the quarter. Now they've come back some since interest rates have kind of settled down, and we'll talk about that in a few moments, but you'll see if the first quarter was not nearly the quarter that we had hoped it would be. But again, I think there's some good stabilizing assets that in the short term are subjected to some volatility. Again, we'll talk about that a little bit more in a few moments. So what that meant for the quarter on page three, negative return of 3%, again, driven mostly by the MLP allocation and the real estate allocation. In addition, if you recall, we met in March and replaced BBH, which was your largest equity allocation, your core equity allocation. They were replaced with Vanguard. But that happened right at the end of the quarter, actually, early April. So, unfortunately, their results didn't hold up. So, happy that we made that decision. In hindsight, certainly wish we would have made it a little sooner. But I think the portfolio is allocated in a much better place now. So, you can see the returns. Obviously, that quarterly return brought down the one-year return to 4.9% through March 31st. When we were here last quarter talking about results through 12/31, that one-year performance return was actually 12.2%. So we dropped off a good quarter and added a challenging first quarter. And that just shows you that, you know, how much endpoint sensitivity there is to the numbers when you add a challenging quarter like that. So 3 years, 5 years, still close to the benchmark, but slightly behind on a net of fees basis. And again, I think a lot of that was due to one of the larger allocations, which was that BBH Core Select Fund that had a lot of difficulty keeping up with the marketplace. So when you look back at some of that underperformance, that's where a lot of that came from. Certainly a little bit of the MLP portfolio recently and real estate, as I mentioned. So currently, that did bring down the five-year number. And we'll talk. I want to talk a little bit about calendar year performance here in a few moments, because we had a few quarters in a row there where we had returns over the five-year period that were above 6.5%. So this is a little bit newer of a trend for us, but I think when you look at some of the underlying performance that this isn't capturing right now, I'm not as concerned as this number would potentially reflect. And then the other goal, to be in the top half of the peer median universe,
did not achieve that goal over the five-year period, of course, with the return, net of return at 5%. That was below the average public pension plan.
What was the average?
It was closer to 7%. Now, I think this is a fair benchmark. We should always be concerned about what peers are doing, but I caveat that with saying this compares all public pension plans. So it can be, you know, your mega funds of the world, CalPERS, CalSTRS, teachers retirement system here in Texas. So it's return assumptions that can be anywhere from 8 to 8.5%, right? So these are open funds with longer liabilities. So this portfolio is built with more capital preservation in mind long-term and less return-seeking assets because we have a lower return assumption that we're trying to hit, right? So we don't need to take on as much risk as a pension plan that says that's maybe 50% or 60% funded and has an 8% actuarial assumption, right? That wouldn't be appropriate to have that level of maybe equity risk or private equities and using, you know, the alternatives exposures that is what's really in this peer universe. So,
do you have any feel as to how close they're coming to that assumption?
Yeah, over the last 5 years, it's been difficult. 2015's been a challenge, or 2015 was a challenge.
Right.
So some of that depends on, you know, you're smoothing your assets here 5 years. So some of that's dependent on the smoothing. But, you know, returns have come up some. But certainly, and I'm sure you can speak to this, the general trend has been for other plans to do what you have done and reduce your discount rate because most of them weren't hitting that 8.5. And I mean, you even had plans, still a couple out there with 9% returns.
Oh, no, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. I think the median is 7.5%.
I think it might even be below that now, the more recent surveys. Yeah. Yep, 7.25, I think, the last I've seen.
Okay.
And so my question is, the net return goal of 5%, where and when did we establish that as our goal?
What, the 6.5?
6.5.
We established 6.5 3 years ago?
About 3 years ago.
Because we were at 7.5 or 8.
Was it 15?
Ourselves for a long time. It was just, the consensus was that we ain't going to get there. So, at that point, and that's when we went to the five-year smoothing, too, I think, wasn't it? In the 20-year amortization. We made several changes about the same time.
2014, yeah. I think 2014 we did all those.
Gotcha.
That sounds right.
Yeah, and it's probably a good time to pause. And with this kind of trend towards lowering of discount rates, and when you look at capital markets assumptions, those have certainly come down as well, right? So public equities, you know, below 8% now. And so one thing that we've done with a lot of our clients is what's called an asset allocation study. It's been some time since you've done one of those here. But, you know, I think given kind of where we are and the fact that we did come up a little bit short, I'm not trying to be overreactive to one quarter's performance, but I think it's always helpful as fiduciaries to make sure we're comfortable with the asset allocation. You know, I look at the MLP portfolio, and I'm not 100% certain that everybody's gotten what they expected to get out of that in terms of volatility. Admittedly, I wasn't here for those conversations, but when I look at this plan with a 6.5% rate of return and compare that versus peers and the 400-plus public funds that we work with, that's a little bit of an outlier. Now, I will say, MLPs right now, they've come down in valuation, which has been painful, but the income on those is close to 8% a year. It's just there's been volatility that's not very bond-like, which I think a lot of investors hope that MLPs would be more of a fixed income surrogate when in fact they've had volatility more like the equity market. So maybe I'll just plant that seed. I know there's a lot of things everybody's working on here, but unless there's any objections, I'll go back to our team in Orlando and work on an asset allocation study, and I think it'll at least give us a framework going forward to make sure, and maybe we're fine with the assets exactly how they are, but at least gives us the ability to have an educated discussion and realistically look at capital return assumptions and make sure that we're comfortable with not only the returns that we're trying to achieve, but the risk that maybe we have in the portfolio.
Maybe a dumb question, but when you say an asset allocation study, aren't you already doing that on a regular basis?
Sure.
Kind of just as part of the process?
Yeah, I mean, we're always mindful of capital return assumptions,
right.
But we're not strategically making changes to the investment policy statement here or the asset allocation. And I know we've added some pieces to the portfolio, but that's kind of been a little bit more ad hoc, as opposed to really taking a top-down view of the portfolio and saying, okay, we're adding private real estate, which is starting to fund here. What does that do to the risk and return mix of the portfolio? And I don't know that that has occurred here in quite some time. So it's a bit of a, certainly we're doing that and we're monitoring the asset allocation, but we haven't really made, we haven't really taken an aggregate top-down look at it.
I don't want to jump, but the next page shows asset allocation.
It does.
I'm sure Tony's going there, but I.
Yes, sir.
And that's what he's talking about.
Right.
Is how
well, I was trying to get an understanding of how would this thing you're suggesting be different than
the roles we already got.
Yeah, what we're already doing.
Well, it may or may not be, as Tony has said. I mean, and I don't want to speak for him, but, you know, we might be off 1% here or 2% there, or we ought to be more heavily low in large cap U.S. or whatever. I mean, that's what they're talking about,
yes.
I think.
Exactly. Correct. And it would show scenario analysis. So we'll just take for instance, since we're talking about MLPs, a target of 10%. Well, what does it look like if we say going forward the target should be 7.5% or 5%? And then where do those assets go? Maybe it's back into public equities. Maybe it's into core fixed income. Maybe it's into real estate. Maybe it's into infrastructure, more broad infrastructure. But that allows us to run a variety of scenarios and say, okay, here's what the computer modeling and expected returns look like. Here's the risk that you're taking for that portfolio. And again, maybe we look at the expected risk and return on this portfolio, and we say, you know, we're confident that we can hit 6.5% at a measured level of risk, but I think it's incumbent upon us to reassert that from time to time.
How often are the allocations tweaked?
So we're rebalancing the portfolio on a monthly basis to target. Yes. Yeah. And that was implemented last year.
Before I always came to you to ask for rebalancing, we made it automatic.
Right. That's what I thought.
We'd get it balanced.
I couldn't remember if it's monthly or quarterly or what.
Yeah.
It's like within days, too. So we keep it invested all the time.
Yeah, and we had an unfortunate occurrence where we had a manager liquidate, and those assets sat in cash. So that's also part of that's captured in that 5-year return. That was obviously detrimental because we were in cash at a time when the market was rallying. Now, it was just a small piece of the portfolio, but
who was it?
It was the Credit Suisse.
Okay, Credit Suisse.
MLP, ETN.
I couldn't remember which one it was.
And they redeemed kind of early in the quarter, and really, without having that, the reallocation of authority,
we didn't have it that time, so the money sat there for 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
That's solved.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, you can see on page 5, getting back to the report, pretty close to the target allocations, and really the only differential here was the cash and equivalents at 1.2%, and that goes back to the termination and liquidation of BBH that occurred at quarter end, and then those assets were transferred into the Vanguard S&P 500 index fund, and that happened in the first week of April. So it came back into line shortly after this, but within policy as well.
Tell you what, with the volatility in the market, you can rebalance one day and the next day it'd be all screwed up. I mean, that's the problem right now with all the extreme volatility we've been having. I know we fight it, so.
And hopefully that's something that the automatic rebalancing can help capitalize on. You can, I hate to say that it's luck, but if you have an asset class that's run up in the last couple of days and you catch that at the end of the quarter, you're taking assets away from there and redeploying to areas of the portfolio that have gotten cheaper. And we've adhered to the target, so we're not trying to tactically, you know, guess
what's happened to our alternative investment. Have they made a call on any of that money? Where do we stand on that?
The real estate portfolio?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they've been using a line of credit to fund capital calls, which you as an investor, that's better for you, because that keeps your capital deployed in this portfolio. So they had a conversation with Starwood is the group, the real estate group. They expect the portfolio to be about 20% called by the first quarter of next year. But they're making investments right
now. But we're paying them for our commitment, are we not?
Correct, but it's on called capital. So they haven't called any capital from you yet.
Okay.
Which is how they kind of mitigate those. That J curve is what that's called, the expenses early on in the life of that fund. So that's an investor friendly tactic that they have at their disposal. So fees, I think that's a good point to talk about fees. On page six, notice these, if you're looking at the report from last quarter, came down quite a bit, due primarily to the replacement of BBH with Vanguard 500 Index Fund. Kind of three down there under domestic equity, charging 0.05%. BBH was closer to about 1%, actually a little bit above. So on an annual basis, we were looking at fees of $174,000 a year for investment management fees. That brought it down to $108,000 a year. So about a 40% savings from deciding to go passive in that investment. So obviously, close to $60,000 a year, that helps pay some benefit payments. I think very important. Good sign. So page seven shows the returns. We've talked about this a little bit. I mentioned one of the detractors for the quarter was domestic equity. Shaded in the middle there, total domestic equity down 3.21%. Of course, a lot of volatility during the quarter. And again, this reflects a portfolio that had a large investment with a manager that's no longer a piece of this portfolio in BBH. There are other areas of the portfolio that I think behaved quite nicely on a relative standpoint. Total International came back a little bit for the quarter, and you'll see that in the May 31st update as well. Looking at total fixed income, with rates rising, that's obviously put downward pressure on bond prices, but we've been very strategic using the direct credit fund with LBC and then the PIMCO Tactical Opportunities Fund. So while the benchmark is actually down 1% over the course of the quarter, the total fixed income portfolio here was up 0.5%. So not a lot in terms of absolute performance, but when the benchmark's negative and you're positive, that's a pretty good sign. And that was good enough to rank your fixed income portfolio in the first percentile of all fixed income peers. MLPs, pretty challenging time period given commodity prices and kind of what's happened. Now, those have come back, and again, we'll talk about this in the May 31st update, but obviously with 10% of the portfolio allocated to energy infrastructure assets over the course of the quarter, the income off of that portfolio was not able to make up for the capital depreciation. And again, real estate, similar story in the REIT portfolio. And we saw this with most income producing assets as the Fed raised rates, and you could start to get more interest or more coupon payment off of a very safe U.S. Treasury, the trade to be in something that had more potential for capital appreciation or depreciation, that risk return trade-off wasn't viewed as favorably as it was going into the quarter. So you saw income assets like MLPs and REITs trade off on that. Now that's again backed up in the May 31st report, and I keep referencing that because I know these are some challenging numbers to look at for the quarter, and it has certainly come back some. So I know we tend to focus on the short term sometimes, which is not what we should do as long-term investors. We've got a life of this plan of, as you were mentioning, 40 plus years. So I don't want to get too bogged down in a quarter, but it's certainly incumbent on us to look at the returns and make sure we're comfortable with where the allocation is, which I think is a good reason to do this asset allocation study. Any questions? I'm happy to talk about the individual manager performance, but it might be helpful if there aren't any questions about this, to just briefly, if that's okay, talk about the May 31st update. So it's the six-page. Yeah, I apologize. We don't have this electronically. So page one shows the economic update. So obviously, a good month for the S&P 500. The month of May up 2.41%. International equity there at the bottom of the equity table on the top left-hand side. Down for the month is U.S. As a U.S. dollar appreciated versus most foreign currencies. If you look to the right-hand side, and there's a lot of data on this page, but top right-hand side, that shows, so L stands for large cap, M is mid cap, S is small cap, V is value, B is blend, and G is growth. And you can see the differentiation or the dispersion in market returns. So bottom left-hand side of that table, small cap value for 2017 was up 7.8%. Look at large cap growth, up 30.2%. So if you were under-allocated to large cap growth or over-allocated to, say, value, small cap value, your return difference was pronounced. And we have a lot of blend managers in this portfolio, so we get exposure to growth and value. But I will say that your managers here, Diamond Hill and BBH, historically were a little bit overweight to the value sector. And long term, that's acceptable, but short term, it has been a headwind. Performance on page two, you can see market value, top line there, $20.3 million as of May 31st. So coming back a little bit, up 1.56 for the month of May, outperforming the policy index, so a good sign there. And then recall that I think very average cash flow benefit payments is just shy of $200,000 a year. So consider since the March 31st report, you've had about
$200,000.
Yeah, $200,000 a year. Sorry. Yeah, so almost $200,000 go out since the $125,000 go out since the writing of the March 31st report. So you can see the Vanguard 500 index is funded up 2.4% for the month. Talked about international and the U.S. dollar presenting a headwind for non-U.S. assets, but we started to see a little bit of a turnaround in Harbor International relative to its benchmark. Was down, but not nearly as bad as the benchmark for the month or the year-to-date period. Last couple of comments, because I did want to talk about the turnaround, albeit briefly, in those income-producing assets on page three. So you can see the total MLP portfolio for the month up 2.5%, just a little bit above that. And then real estate coming back nicely with the Cohen & Steers Realty Fund up 3.8%. So making some of those losses back up. Again, pretty volatile. It's a short period of time to look at it, but it is nice to see those come back. And again, when you look at that MLP allocation with yields at about 8%, it's just the volatility that's been the painful part of this. If we can get some stabilization in prices, that'll pay a lot of income in that part of the portfolio. Last few pages show financial reconciliation, and then the allocation as of May 31st is on page five. And I mentioned we came back closer to target allocation once that Vanguard fund was, those assets were deployed from the BBH liquidation. So you can see that in the middle of the page there. So this is something that we can actually produce monthly. I'm not sure if it would be helpful to, we can provide it electronically. I caution, sometimes looking at a portfolio monthly is detrimental to long-term strategic thinking, but it's available if the committee would like it.
I thought it was noteworthy that Buffett and some of them are wanting to do away with the quarterly reports.
Good point.
The volatility is just horrible.
Yeah.
The other thing that went through my mind, we got 20 million assets and we have 2 million a year expenses. That's 10% a year. We got a headwind to start with at 4%. We're going to spend 2 of 20 and we'll make 6.5. We're still 3.5 behind. It's a pretty good headwind out there, really.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the markets, and I certainly don't have a crystal ball, but there's a lot of, it feels like it's more geopolitical concerns right now, right? Rightfully so, obviously. Trade talks or lack thereof. But, you know, the one good thing when you look at long-term earnings on a portfolio like this is corporate profits are still close to all-time highs. When you look at valuations or the price that it costs to invest in, say, stock in the S&P 500, it's not as expensive as it was a year and a half ago. And now, of course, that requires those earnings to continue to come in strong. But when you look at revenue, corporate revenues at all-time highs, you look at unemployment at all-time lows, and there's something like 6.5 million jobs that are unfilled right now. There's more people, or there's more jobs than there are people looking for jobs. So, I don't know where we are in the cycle, but at least it feels like there's some positives out there despite some of the volatility that we encountered in the quarter.
Does your firm have any expressions on the volatility created by the electronic trading? Do they feel like it's a factor or not? I mean,
not a firm-wide view. I think it depends who you talk to. You know, the people in our firm that worked at asset management companies before and say trade it, have a stronger opinion, and I think their opinion probably matters a little bit more. I think they would submit that when you have some of those triple levered ETFs that all of a sudden you can't trade in, that adds some volatility to the marketplace. There's more people trading and holding for less than a day or less than a minute than any other point in history. Certainly that you would think that would increase volatility, but we actually took a look at this quarter's volatility and compared it to historical averages, and it's actually below historical averages. It's just that there's been this time period going back to, say, 2015 where the VIX volatility index is what the industry uses. It's really been, you know, declining, so I think we've kind of gotten lulled into this thinking that, well, we haven't had negative returns in a while, so we shouldn't have negative returns going forward, and we know that's not the case.
Any other questions for Tony?